Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide in the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, the 8th of February, March 2023. Jeez, I'm into March 8 days. I'm still saying February. Along with Mr. Aaron Zommer, our producer and engineer, we welcome you into the big program this morning. Weather in the news coming up at the bottom of the hour, 8:30 or so, 8:33 to be precise. We'll be joined by weatherology meteorologist Kara Foster. She will update us on the storm coming in. Looks like tomorrow into tomorrow night is going to be the worst of it. And our listeners in southwest Wisconsin, Richland Center area, going to get hit the hardest. A winter storm watch in effect from tomorrow at noon through Friday at 6 a.m. Maybe, as my granddad used to say, partner, a foot of snow down there or over there in Richland Center. So be aware of that. WXCO, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, maybe 3 to 4 inches by the time it's all said and done. And Amory, for once, kind of missing the brunt of it, only an inch or maybe inch and a half as well. We'll have the complete weather forecast a little bit later. Also, headlines of the news coming up later. Coming up at 8:15, we are very pleased to welcome a national-level guest, Stuart Stevens, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. He worked for George W. Bush, Mitt Romney. He ran or helped run the communications for Mitt in 08 and 12, and then had an epiphany and said, you know what, I can't do the Trumpster thing. And he left the Republican Party and joined and helped start the Lincoln Project. And he wrote a book called It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. Here it is. We'll discuss that with him at 8:15. But right now, our friend, our colleague, and knower of all things across the state of Wisconsin, the host of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow. It is Crossover Wednesday. Mr. Kreitlow, how the heck are you?
Knower of all things. Yes. I want that on a business card.
Or right?
maybe then we'll rename the show. We were talking about shows. And yeah. How it's such a nice coincidence that you got this gig on the Todd Albaugh Show. You know,
funny, they had an opening and they were looking for a dude named Todd Albaugh. And it turns out,
and of all of them, you turned out to be the best.
Your name is not popular because, like, when I opened my social media years ago, you know, you try for your first and last name. As it turns out, at Todd Albaugh was available on pretty much everything.
Of course, it was. Guess what? So was Pat Kreitlow.
I bet
believe
it was.
Me. Aaron Zommers is as well.
See,
we have unique.
There is nothing, you know, John Doe about any of us. Zommers, though, gives me the most trouble.
Really?
Because he's now the third person with a similar sounding Z name that I know. I first knew somebody named Scott Zahn, Z-A-H-N.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Then I got to know somebody named Jim Zahns, Z-O-N-S. And the first time that I referred to Mr. Zahns as Zahn, he was beside himself, like, did you forget my name? And I can't tell you how many times there's been that momentary pause where Aaron almost became known as Aaron Zahn or Aaron Zahns before Zommers came out. And of course, I was saying Zomers for a time there because I had like Zomerfest, you know, the old Austrian summer festival on the brain. So this is a guy who's maybe his name's available, but that still doesn't mean I'm going to remember it.
Fair enough.
You know. Fair enough. Well,
I've definitely had like my old Boy Scout troop shirts had my name on the back and people would see it and be like, Zomers also. And I'd be like, well,
close,
you know, that's close.
But no cigar.
Yeah.
Mr. Kreitlow, you have a guest. We talked about Stuart Stevens coming up on our show, on your show. I appreciate that. Let's plug your show, Up North News, tomorrow morning from 6 until 8. You have a great guest as well. Tell the folks about it if you'd be so very kind.
I actually have two wonderful guests that I'm really looking forward to talking to.
Always up in me.
I know. but two of my favorite state assembly reps, Francesca Hong from the Madison area, Christina Shelton from the Green Bay area, they are among the legislators who tomorrow are going to be reintroducing their Economic Justice Bill of Rights. And they will be doing so along with, you know, a nice honor roll of lawmakers, Senators Chris Larson and Melissa Agard and Representative Kaylin Haywood. You'll have Angela Lang from BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing Communities, Stephanie Salgado from Voces de la Frontera, Rabbi Bonnie Margulis from Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice. I mean, just so much is going to be said about the good things that a legislature or Congress could do for the people if they wanted to focus on the people. Mm-hmm. And I'm very delighted that Representatives Hong and Shelton will join me tomorrow in the 7 a.m. hour to talk a bit about it.
Should be a great time. Representative Hong, one of my favorite people, because she has a fantastic restaurant. She was a restaurateur first and foremost, Morris Ramen here in Madison, and has really done so much to help everyone in the industry, but particularly young people and women in the Madison area in the restaurant and food industry. And then she got elected to the state house or the state assembly against it. There was a big primary and a lot of people didn't give her the chance. But to me, she is someone, I think from her service experience, she has the ability to connect with real folks so well, and she understands people so well. And so I'm excited.
Yeah, she speaks in plain English. And, right, and that's what I liked about her from the beginning is, look, you know from working in the Capitol, as I did too, that when you come from someplace like Madison, when you come from a safe district, lawmakers can come in one of two flavors. They can either be completely selfish and unhelpful because they're safe, they're going to get elected, they don't need to do anything, and they're definitely people like that. And then there's others who, because they're in a safe seat, can say things more directly than maybe somebody in a purple area. They can really speak truth to power, and Fran Hong is the epitome of that.
Really looking forward to it, Pat. That is tomorrow, you said, the 7 o'clock hour, correct?
Yes.
All right. You can hear that show, Up North News with Pat Kreitler, tomorrow. You can, if you're not in one of our radio station areas, stream it on the Civic Media app. Download it for free at Civic Media on your app store. Listen to Pat Kreitler every morning, 6 until 8, across the Civic Media radio network. Have a great day at Lake Wissota, Pat. We're actually getting the snow this time instead of you guys tomorrow.
I know. So take care out there. Be careful. Be safe.
All right. Have a great day. Pat Kreitler, host of Up North News. We thank you for being with us. Stay tuned. We are going to have Stuart Stevens, author of It Was All a Lie, next on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Allball Show is now 8:15 on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 8th of March, 2023, Wednesday. We are happy to have you back with us. We are awaiting the connection here this morning with Stuart Stevens from the Lincoln Project, author of It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. Hopefully he will be joining us here very shortly, just kind of working out. These things happen. It is live radio, and that's the way it goes. And so we will kind of tell you other things going on across the country and across the world this morning, as we await Stuart connecting up with us this morning. Here's a couple of headlines of things you need to know on this Wednesday, the 8th of March, 2023. COVID-19. That's not where we're going to start. We're actually going to start the top story this morning, which is the flooding in many parts of California. The attempts to recover from colossal amounts of snow that trapped mountain communities. More than 16 million people are now under flood watches ahead of a storm set to drench the state Thursday with dangerous amounts of rain. The places that will be impacted, mostly across the central and northern California area, include the San Francisco Bay Area and Sacramento. They've already been dealt layers of snow from the previous brutal storms. Mexico kidnapping. Two of the four Americans who authorities say were kidnapped in Mexico last week have been found dead, officials said Tuesday. The other two were found alive. The group of friends who traveled from South Carolina, so one of them, a mother of six, could undergo a medical procedure across the border, but they never made it to the appointment. The discovery of the Americans' whereabouts comes days after the four were targeted by a Mexican cartel that likely mistook them for a Haitian drug smuggler, according to U.S. officials. Their abduction highlights the ongoing violence that has plagued some Mexican cities during the long-running Mexican drug war, as well as the growing businesses of medical tourism. And that's kind of a couple of headlines that you need to know this morning. It is 8:17, and I believe now we have Mr. Stevens on the line. And in the Zoom meeting here, we're going to let him in just a moment. And happy to have him along with us this morning. And happy to share his story and his take on the Republican Party. Stuart, are you with us this morning? All right, we're...
You should be...
Oh, wait. Are you?
Oh, there you are. We hear you. There you are. Sorry. Fantastic.
My apologies.
No, you're fine. You're absolutely.
This is particularly embarrassing because I did go to film school. You know, especially.
I know you did. Well, no, I'm absolutely delighted.
Special humiliation not to be able to do this here.
I went to broadcasting communication school, University of Wisconsin Platteville. But I tell people now, like my producer, Mr. Zomers here, who's all of 24, I said my radio editing class involved actual splicing of actual tape, you know, at a reel to reel.
Boy, am I glad we don't have to do that now.
When I was at UCLA Film School, mm-hmm. we edited on a movie.
Wow.
And the standard editing thing was the opening sequence of Hawaii 5-0. And I still wake up hearing this because we had to cut this thing. And like all these rooms would be full of people cutting the opening to Hawaii 5-0. I have no idea why that got picked. But,
so you can't watch reruns of Hawaii 5-0 without it triggering you to a certain degree.
Exactly. Now, you know, you'd have to go to a gym of motion picture history to find a movie
right? Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stuart, I can't thank you enough for filling in, especially for your colleague, Reed Galen, who was
ill.
Yeah,
no, Reed is a sick puppy, so he's been struggling for a week. One of these things that went around his whole family, so
I'm
glad I can help.
We wish him well, and I'm looking forward to having Reed, one of the co-founders of the Lincoln Project, on another show. But I got to be honest, when your wonderful assistant said, you know, Reed is ill, but I think I might be able to get Stuart Stevens, is that okay? I almost fell off my chair because we started this show back last fall in November, and you make a list, right, of people that, yes, I can get that person, and I think I can get that person. And then you make this list of, wouldn't it be lovely if? And you were on that list because I read your book, It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. Here is my copy that has been read and dog-tagged and other things. I'll tell you, it was cathartic. It was like, I feel like I owe you a check for therapy, quite frankly. It's just a masterful book, and I appreciate you coming on. For those,
When I finished it, I gave to my longtime partner, my political business, Russ Schrieffer. I gave it to him, and I said, Russ, you know, it's short but depressing. And he said, well, so are suicide notes. So
I think for folks like us, and I got involved when I was all of 12 years old, 1980, putting up yard signs, going door to door for Ronald Reagan, and then at the time, Bob Caston was running for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin, and a guy by the name of Steve Gunderson was running for U.S. Congress, and all three of them won. And I was in fifth grade, and I thought, well, this is easy. This is fantastic.
I worked on that casting campaign.
Really. And Bob Bob Caston was a great guy. You may or may not know this. I talk about this in our show sometimes. This could never happen in today's Republican Party. Bob Caston, Republican from Wisconsin, had the audacity to say, you know what, maybe instead of spending tens of millions of dollars in foreign aid in terms of defense and missiles to fight the Soviet Union, maybe we should create a program called the Central American Scholarship Program to bring disadvantaged young people from Central America, give them a free two-year education. He started this through the State Department and USAID. It was a bipartisan project. They brought disadvantaged Central Americans to the United States. It was administered through Georgetown. And one of the communities, one of the colleges that hosted 15 to 18 of these students every year was my little town of 5,000 people in a two-year college in Richland Center in southwest Wisconsin. It changed not only our community, and I don't say this about things about very often, it changed my life because I've been to El Salvador subsequently 39 times now since 1992.
Have you written about this? This would be a great thing to write about.
The point is more on Bob Caston and his idea was we can change countries by spreading democracy organically, and we wouldn't have that in the Republican Party today. Agree or disagree?
Oh, listen, brother, I do this. I'm writing a new book, and I was doing this. You know, if you go back to moments like the 1980 debate in Texas for the primary between Bush and Reagan, mm-hmm. when they had this genteel argument over who was more moderate on immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they were trying to get to be the more moderate person on immigration. If you read George Bush's acceptance speech at the 2000 convention, which was written by Michael Gerson, who's, you know, tragically just passed away, but who, you know, writes like an angel crying.
Yeah.
And you read that, it reads like something from an artifact of a lost civilization. You know, it's all about humility and compassion and service. I mean, that guy couldn't get 5% in the Republican Party today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's extraordinary. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. I think that the role of Fox, which obviously has been in the news a lot because of, you know, the Dominion stuff. I think we really, it's often misunderstood. I think that there's this common accepted wisdom that Fox changed the Republican Party. I don't buy that. I think the Republican Party changed Fox.
Fascinating.
So Fox was perfectly happy to support Mitt Romney. They were perfectly happy to support McCain, though McCain wasn't their choice in the primary. Romney wasn't their choice in the primary, nor was Trump their choice in the primary. So they didn't have enough sway to influence the Republican primary. Now they're trying to get DeSantis. I think they're going to be unsuccessful. But once that was done, they signed on. And, you know, I've spent more of my life than I'd like to think of arguing with, you know, the so-called mainstream media, the New York Times, whatever. But you could argue with them. And there was a basis of facts. And there was some reality-based conversation you could have. And they did hold themselves to a certain standard. Where that's not, Fox just will say what the party says. So, you know, if Barack Obama had come out for a Muslim ban, I think the New York Times would have taken his head off. And the Washington Post, and they wouldn't have just towed the line. They would have held him accountable, and they probably wouldn't have endorsed him. And that really is the fundamental difference, I think, with how media on our side operates. Mona Chaffee, you know, who writes now for The Bulwark, who wrote for Weekly Standard, National Review for years, and just beautiful. She was writing about this, about how it changed. And I really hold the party responsible. You know, I mean, had every elected Republican official who you and I know who knew 4 days after the 2020 election that Trump had lost, and they just got in their comm shop to put out a statement congratulating the president-elect. Not a particularly high barrier here.
Not really.
You know, not asking them to, like, you know, you got to go see this machine gun nest, you know, charge me. She's just like, put out like a statement congratulating the president-elect. I mean, you know, the French embassy managed to do it. Why can't we? it would have isolated Trump. And I think the events that unfolded afterwards would have been very different. Instead, there was this, let's humor him, what can it hurt? Well, we found all these people that said, what can it hurt? You know, they ended up running for their lives on January 6th.
What do you make of all this this stuff coming out of the Dominion lawsuit? And now we find out under oath, under deposition, under discovery, that pretty much nobody at Fox believed the big lie. They all knew that they all knew that Trump lost. Murdoch admits it, but yet they continued to do it anyway. And now yesterday, you know, with Tucker Carlson showing this this completely crappy, you know, edited thing to make it look like nothing happened. Even you've even got guys like Mitch McConnell coming out now and denouncing Tucker Carlson.
You know, I'm glad Mitch McConnell did that.
Yeah.
But the cynic in me says it's only when it begins to infringe upon his own personal safety that he gets really concerned.
Right. Right.
You know, showing that video does make the environment of the Capitol less safe. Because, you know, as somebody who worked a fair amount with the Secret Service in campaigns, you know, the stuff you see is never the stuff that's happening.
Right.
And there's always a lot of stuff in the back. You know, and the movement of people is so critical. You know, their whole theory is of protection is to get the protectee out. And if you see one of these long motorcades, there will be inside that motorcade what they call a tactical team. And they're dispatched to stop and fight while the other elements get the protectee out, get the president out, get there. So that's what they did in that situation. They got vice president to a safe place,
right,
a secure location. They got Nancy Pelosi to that. And they do that. They don't, like, get on the elevator. I mean, right. They have, you know, places that are not open to the public that they go that if the public knew about. It's incredibly irresponsible. Look, I mean, I know that, you know, these people. I know Tucker. People forget Tucker Carlson wanted to be a writer for Tina Brown, who used to edit The New Yorker, when she started Talk Magazine, right?
Right.
He wrote a profile of George Bush for Tina. So, you know, he failed at that.
Right.
Then he wanted to be on CNN. He failed at that. He wanted to be on NBC. He failed at that. He went to Fox, and he was kind of kicking around. And finally, you know...
Hold that thought, Stuart. We got a hard break we have to hit. Somebody who did not fail was Stuart Stevens. Back after this. Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show. It is 8:33 of the Civic Media Radio Network. Mr. Zahmer is trying to give our wonderful guest, Stuart Stevens, a nightmares here, playing the opening theme of Hawaii 5-0. We welcome you. If you missed the first part, listen to the podcast. Stuart did some editing back in the day on Hawaii 5-0 openings. It is not going to feel like Hawaii, and we are going to go quickly to Kara Foster from Weatherology, our meteorologist. It looks like the storm is moving in, and it looks like folks in southwest Wisconsin, Richland Center, are going to get hit the hardest. Just have a couple of minutes because we have a big national guest. But give us the lowdown and the skinny on the storm moving in, Ms. Kara, if you'd be so kind.
You got it. Yeah, basically, so things did shift a little bit further south. So basically, when we were talking yesterday, it was more central and western, and now it's definitely more southwestern, of course, and then along the southern border as well. Basically, the gist of it is that area will expect about 5 to 8 inches of snow throughout the next couple of days here. The rest of the state, the central and northeastern portions of the state, will still expect some snow, but it won't be as much, probably up to about 4 inches until about Thursday night. So for today, might see some scattered rain and snow showers throughout the state, reach a high of 36 in Amory. We got 37 in cloudy in Wausau. And as we head into Richland Center, a little bit warmer, cloudy in 44. As we head into tonight, snow showers throughout the state, just some flurries though. We'll dip down to about 27 in Amory, 26 in Wausau, and we're back down to about 30 in Richland Center. And then as we head into tomorrow, snow showers will be pretty widespread throughout the state. But as I said, most of it will be centralized throughout that southern portion of the state. Probably only expecting about an inch throughout the day, throughout the entirety of the state. And then Thursday night is the bulk of the accumulation. Most areas throughout the central and northeastern portions of the state will probably see about 1 to 3 inches over Thursday night throughout the southern portions of the state could see between 3 and 7. It's going to be quite a lot of snowfall. And then it will start to taper off throughout Friday. Highs will still be in the lower 30s, lower to upper 30s. And then throughout the weekend, we will have another kind of round of snowfall coming in. Don't know too much about that one quite yet, but it won't be nearly as much as tomorrow's snowfall for sure. I'm meteorologist Kara Foster.
All right, Kara, thank you. Warned us yesterday, if you have to have plans on Thursday night, just cancel them. Stay home or go down south, right? Probably the best
thing. Right, exactly.
All right, thanks, Kara. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Kara Foster from Weatherology. Our guest today, Stuart Stevens from the Lincoln Project, a senior advisor there, also author of one of my favorite books, It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump, and advisor to presidents throughout history and campaign people. Worked on Bob Caston's campaign for U.S. Senate here in Wisconsin. Also worked on George W. Bush's presidential campaigns, and also worked for Mitt Romney in 08 and 12 as well. So that's just a part of his resume. And,
we lost.
Pardon?
We lost that race.
I heard that. But then, like Todd, you know, and Rick Wilson and Trygve Olson and others kind of had an epiphany, and all of us kind of reached it for different reasons and different spaces. But I want to start out, if you indulge me, Stuart, I want to just read the opening paragraph to this book. Because if anybody, and you are a writer, you worked on television shows, written for television as well, talk about that a little bit later. You're a great writer. And one thing I love and respect is great writing. I don't care whether it's a book, whether it's a TV show, whether it's film, anything that's written well, I just have a great respect for it. And if we have any aspiring authors or writers out there, and you want to know how to grab the attention of your reader, try this on for size. It begins. I have no one to blame but myself. I believed. That's where it all started to go wrong. I was drawn to a party that espoused a core set of values. Character counts, personal responsibility, strong on Russia. The national debt actually mattered. Immigration made America great. A big tent party invited all. Legislation would come and go. Compromises would be necessary. But these principles were assumed to be a shared and defined what it meant to be a Republican for the last 50 years. What a fool I was. I mean, that's the way it begins. And I mean, if you want to draw in people, I mean, that's how you do it. I mean, complete honesty. And as soon as I read that, I'm like, this guy and this book is legit. Because I spent, almost 30 years in the Republican Party, never at the level and the success that you had. And it was hard for me in 2011 to walk away after I was in a closed Senate Republican caucus and heard senators, not my boss, he was the only one who walked out of the room, but everybody else in that room were giddy about these so-called voter ID bills that were really voter suppression bills and taking people's constitutional right to vote away. And that's where I said, I'm done. I want to talk a little bit about your journey, Stuart. You grew up in Mississippi, correct?
Yep.
How did you get involved in the Republican Party?
I got involved probably like a lot of people because my parents were involved. This was sort of in the bad old days, the Mississippi burning days.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and dad had gone to University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, with a guy named William Winter, who was running for governor against the last avowed segregationist, John Bell Williams. And this was in the Democratic primary. There really wasn't a Republican Party in Mississippi, like so many of these southern states then.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a kid and I did what you do when, I walked precincts, went around. And there was this one moment that just really crystallized for me. And so this is 1967, right? So Winter was getting a lot of death threats. And we know this now because Bobby Kennedy basically wiretapped everybody, and there are these wiretaps that are out there. And there's a wonderful film that's been made about William Winter called The Toughest Job. And some of these death threats are in this film. And, he didn't, like all these governor candidates today for the most part, he didn't have any security. It's not but there was a group of law enforcement guys retired, some, off duty, who were trying to help him. And in those days, you really had a question of what law enforcement you could trust. Because if you go back to the terrible tragedy where the three civil rights workers were kidnapped and murdered and put in the dam in the Shelby County, Mississippi, they were stopped, we now know, by a deputy sheriff. So anyway, my dad had been an FBI agent, and he was one of these guys who was trying to kind of help Winter out.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd been this, we were in the locker room of a high school in Pascagoula, Mississippi, on a Friday night when you could still get big crowds, for rallies. And there'd been this very specific death threat against Winter that if you go out and speak in front of this in the stadium, you'll be shot. And they were trying to talk Winter out of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Winter was this very tough guy. A veteran, he was like, no, I'm going to do it. And Mrs. Winter was there, and she was sort of quietly crying. And, I was just a kid watching this. And these guys, they couldn't talk him out of it, and they went out to their cars, and they came back with rifles, and they put them under their coats, and they got Winter to put on one of these bulky bulletproof vests.
Mm-hmm.
And, he went out there. And I just thought it was, like, the bravest thing I'd ever seen. And if this was politics, this is what, how could you resist this?
Mm-hmm.
I was drawn to it by then. I was always interested in kind of three things, politics, film, and writing, and have tried to pursue those three. I worked in all of Winter. He lost that campaign. He then lost another campaign for governor that I worked in. And then finally, I quit working for him, and he got elected governor in his third and was probably the greatest governor Mississippi's had in, the last century.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a page when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
For Congressman then Thad Cochran, who was from Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. And then later when I was in film school, Cochran was running for the U.S. Senate and as a Republican. And the guy who had been his chief of staff, what was then called administrative assistant, he had decided to run for Cochran's seat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was running against John Stennis's son. John Stennis was a sort of legendary senator from Mississippi. No one thought this guy could win. They always thought John Stennis' son would win. And he didn't have any money, and he called me up and said, you know, I'd stayed in touch with him. He'd been my boss. Right. Look, you've got to make commercials for me. Like, you're in film school. And I was like, John, I just made these stupid little films. You know, I don't know how to make commercials. But, you know, he taught me into it, and I did. And I figured out how to make commercials, and he won. He won because he was the right guy in the right place, mm-hmm. which is so often the case in politics. Mm-hmm. But then I discovered people would pay me money to make commercials for them. So I could do it kind of like migrant labor work. You know, no one would pay me to write then. Mm-hmm. So I could go work in campaigns, get paid money, and try to write. And then finally, when I got to a point where I could get published and, you know, do books and articles instead of writing for television, I had really sort of fallen in love with campaigns and, you know, being a gunslinger.
It's like, for people that have never been in it, the only thing I could equate it to, and thank God I don't have an addictive personality, but it's what I hear from people that are on drugs. I mean, it just becomes, you get obsessed with it, and it's the high that you get from it.
Yeah, you know, most people grow up and do other things. Mm-hmm. There's only a weird little few of us that, you know, probably show some deep psychological problems to right. stay in campaigns. But, you know, I think pretty quickly it's like sports. You realize the pain of losing is greater than the pleasure of winning.
Yeah.
And it's that fear of pain that in many ways drives us. Mm-hmm. But it gives your life a very definitive value structure if you accept it. Mm-hmm. And I did accept it too much so that if you win, you've done well. And if you've lost, you failed. And you won or you lost. There was a scoreboard. You know, like in regular advertising, if you get hired by banks to up deposits 50% and you're up at 49%, you go, well, that's pretty good. Yeah. You know, in a campaign, you'd like jump out of a window. So I like that winning and losing. And I like working with other people. It's very different than writing. You know, it's just solitary. And I started doing campaigns abroad, which I thought was really interesting. And, you know, the secret to success in political consulting is to work for people who are going to win anyway. Mm. And just don't screw it up. I mean, it's 100% like coaching.
See, I always pick the people that were really good people that had no chance to win. I shouldn't say that, but too often.
You got to get out of it. You got to get out of it. You can't get sentimental about it. So I was lucky, and I worked for people and, you know, had some success, helped win campaigns. And then you start working in bigger and bigger campaigns. Yeah. So I worked in the Dole campaign. And then I went down in 99 to Austin to work in the Bush campaign.
Mm-hmm. You were very successful at your win-loss record. You have one of the best win-loss records in Republican political consulting. You know, like you said, worked on the Bush campaign, worked on the Romney campaigns. We could sit here and talk all morning about war stories of campaigns. I want to get, if we can, and we can pick up on the other side of the break, I want to get to kind of the thrust of this book. And you talk about things like cowardice. You talk about things such as family values, race being the original sin of the Republican Party. I guess pick one to start with. If you could let people know what's perhaps one of the biggest lies that the epiphany that you came to, what would it be about the Republican Party?
It's all about race, which is almost, you know, empirically inarguable. Donald Trump's coalition was 85% white in a country that is 60% white. And since we've been on this show, it's less white. Mm. We're headed to becoming a majority-minority country, or minority-majority country, I guess you'd say. And, you know, 1956, Dwight Eisenhower got 44% of the black vote. 44%.
Yeah.
Nixon got like 33. Jackie Robinson campaigned for Nixon. And then with Goldwater, he was against the Civil Rights Act. It fell off a cliff to 7%. And you could have posited that for reasons of shared values, entrepreneurship, cultural conservatism, faith, a lot of African Americans, once the Civil Rights Act passed, and got Pat, would come back to the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Only it never happened. Mm-hmm. So Trump gets 8% of the black vote. So we're going from Goldwater 7% to Trump. So here's a stat that'll just blow your mind. So Ronald Reagan, 1980, wins a sweeping landslide.
Yep.
Right? With 56% of the white vote. John McCain loses a not particularly close race with 57% of the white vote.
Wow.
And that's really all you need to know.
Yeah.
And the party had this choice to do what was necessary to appeal to more non-white voters, or to go the other way, which is to try to maximize white vote and to make it more difficult for those who are non-white to vote. And tragically, that's the course it's gone. You know, and I worked for Bush. We weren't any better at this. Mm-hmm. We only got 8% of the black vote. He was better at getting Hispanic votes. But we at least admitted it was a failure. I mean, Ken Melman, who was chairman of the party in 2005, went in front of the NAACP and apologized for the Southern strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So does that matter? I think it does. I think it's important to realize when you failed at something.
We'll pick up on this after the break here. Stuart Stevens, It Was All Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. More with him after this on the other side of the break. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come gather around, people.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is 8:50 on the time and temperature sign. We have Stuart Stevens as our guest, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, author of It Was All a Lie, How the Republican Party Became Donald Trump. That is just one of his many books. He is a great writer, a great thinker, and a great strategist to work for people like Bob Dole, George W. Bush, Mitt Romney, and many, many others. We appreciate him being with us this morning. Stuart, we talked about before the break, you say it in the book, you said this morning, perhaps the biggest lie is about race, and the Republican Party had a choice at one point which way to go. They chose the dark side. Let me just give you a quick anecdote of what happened in Wisconsin here this last weekend. A town called Muskego, kind of over one of the suburbs of Milwaukee, more or less, predominantly white school district. They hosted a basketball team in the playoffs from Beloit, down kind of by Janesville, Paul Ryan's hometown, predominantly black. And about 15 white kids dressed in wife beater t-shirts and black ski masks and made monkey noises on the sideline towards the Beloit kids at this basketball game over the weekend. The athletic director had no comment on it. And I said, look, I'm no soothsayer here, no Karnak the Magnificent. But I said in 2016, when I've been out of politics for a couple of years, I got out and started a coffee shop. I had people that would come in my shop here in Madison and say, oh, Hillary's got this in the bag. And I said, no. I said, Trump is appealing to the people out in southwest Wisconsin, the rural areas that I grew up with. And I said, if this guy gets elected, I use the analogy of football. I said, you're going to have kids. I mean, this guy is up on a podium mocking a disabled reporter, making racial jokes. I said, that will be the impact. And here we are in 2023, and we see it. What's your thoughts on this?
Look, I think it's sad, tragic. All these things that we used to say that were values in the Republican Party really were important values. Character really does count.
All right.
And leadership really does matter. And, you know, if we elected a bank robber president, probably robbing banks would become more socially acceptable.
Right.
So now Trump is a racist. And, you know, I get in this argument all the time with my Republican friends, and they go, well, come on, sir, are you saying that, you know, everybody voted for Trump, 70 million, whatever, are racist? And I go, well, first of all, there probably are 70 million racists in the country, so let's don't kid ourselves. Yeah. But I think you have to be willing to accept in your value structure that there's something more important to you that you're getting with Trump than having a racist, mm-hmm. because he is a racist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, politics traditionally in America, Republican or Democrat, has been about appealing to your better angels, as Reagan would say,
mm-hmm.
that we are going to be something bigger than we were. I mean, that was true of John Kennedy. I mean, it's true of Barack Obama, mm-hmm. that he was asking you to be something. Trump gives you permission to be your worst self. And that, you know, that little bit of us that we all have, like if somebody cuts you off in a road, you feel this little spurt of road rage. Mm-hmm. He says, that's who you should be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let that person pass you, you're a sucker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely changed the relationship between a citizen and the government, I think. I mean, under Reagan, to be born in America was to win life's lottery. You were the luckiest person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There were inequalities in America, yes, but no one was disadvantaged because they were born in America.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump, to be born in America is to be a victim. Mm-hmm. You're a chump. You're a sucker. There are these powerful forces out there that are taking advantage of you, like Canada. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's going to even the score. And it's a completely different relationship between yourself and the government. It's a grievance-based politics. And, you know, the Republican Party, we used to always accuse the Democrats of being victim shoppers, mm-hmm. which was probably unfair, but we did it. And now, I mean, Republicans are the ultimate victim shoppers. I mean, there's this whole institution dedicated to showing how persecuted white people are in America. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? You really think so? I mean, you really, 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 really think so?
Stuart, we got about... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
We have about 4 minutes left. The book is called It Was All a Lie. During my time in politics, probably the greatest lie I was a part of was in 05, 06 when we passed the Wisconsin DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, so-called Wisconsin. I happened to be gay. I wasn't out at the time. I am now. And my boss did it as respectfully, I guess, as you could say you could. But it was a very hurtful time. That was the biggest lie I was probably a part of. What's your biggest lie in your political career that you were a part of?
Look, I think in the 2004 campaign, when the Bush campaign pushed for a constitutional amendment against gay marriage, it was our darkest moment. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think anybody really believed it. And, you know, there is a strange thing. There's lots and lots of gay men and women involved in Republican politics, you know, increasingly.
Yes. And many are closeted. As you point out in your tweet yesterday, I mean, look, some of the biggest deniers of homosexuality and gay rights are usually gay. Closeted.
Listen, man, I worked a lot in Hollywood films. And
right.
I never worked with as many gay people as I did in Republican campaigns.
It's so true.
It's true. And I think that was... Our darkest moment. And what I hate now, you think about it. What is the Republican Party running on now? I mean, it was one time like we ran against dictators.
Right.
Tear down this wall. So now you have DeSantis. He's running against like bathrooms. He's running against these kids that, you know, are asking questions about their sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. I mean, how incredibly small can you get?
Yeah.
You go from... you know, tear down this wall to tear down this bathroom wall.
Yeah.
And I think you are defined in many ways by your enemies. And that's the sort of collapse of the Republican Party as a moral force.
We have about a minute.
And look, you know, where I come from is we have to vote for Democrats. You know, we're not going to have a third party. And, you know, I spent my life pointing out flaws in the Democratic Party. But... they still believe in the closest thing we have to democracy, and the Republican Party has given that up. I mean, if you think about it, the official position of the Republican Party is that Joe Biden is not a legally elected president.
Yeah.
So the 24 election is not going to be between two parties with different philosophies. It's going to be between one party that believes we have a democracy and one that believes they're running against an occupier. And what does that do? That gives them... not only permission to do whatever it takes, mm-hmm. because we have this illegal president, to some people it gives them an obligation. And you throw that in a country that's got 400 million guns, and where are we going to end up? I don't think 2022 was good. I think it could have been worse.
Yeah.
But we have Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's the second most powerful person in the U.S. House, mm-hmm. who is a Putin agent.
Yeah.
I mean... how did the party that was the most reliably anti-communist, anti-dictator element of American politics now become where the pro-Putin element of American politics is?
30 seconds left. Is Trump the 2024 Republican nominee?
Yes.
Does he beat Joe Biden or does Biden win it? If you had a crystal ball today.
I think Biden will win.
Most important advice to people listening today in 15 seconds.
Vote with... don't compromise. Vote.